Okay, girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings, they're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Club and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself, because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
All right, welcome in everyone to a brand new episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's a podcast that's hosted by myself, Kyle Sconewell, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earl. Give me one second. I got to get some eye bleach here and just totally bleach out my eyes from the horrific gore fest I just watched.
Well, no, look, see, that's the thing, though. I brought Samwise here on the floor. It's like a purge, you know. You look at a cute dog's face and then everything's okay.
Thank you. I mean, holy crap, spoilers here. That shot of Wilson Fisk ripping Gallo's face literally in half is not something I had on my bingo card.
Was it a rip or a press?
It was like a press, and then eventually his hands kind of went like this and kind of ripped the bottom part.
Yeah, he doesn't know his own strength, you know. He doesn't exactly know when it's going to give. I was watching it with Candace, and the moment that Gallo's knees hit the ground, I was like, oh, yeah, he's about to crush his head in his hands, and they're going to make us watch it. This is not going to be one of those, like, oh, you hear a squish and blood flies. It's going to be like, no, train that camera right on it.
That
just
was
right on the goods.
Legitimately horrific, right? By far the goriest thing we've had in the MCU.
Oh, I mean, I loved it.
I know that's your favorite thing. I always forget.
Here's what
about
you
that.
Have to remember, Kyle. When I watched Iron Man for the first time all those years ago, I was just praying that we would get to this point. In all seriousness, though, we talked early on in the season about the kind of throwaway line. Fisk, like, killing, you know, crushing someone's head in his hands. And we asked whether this was something where whether they were referencing an event that we had seen from the Netflix series, or whether this was some off-screen thing we hadn't seen. But I talked about how it was kind of a, if nothing else, like a fun reference to a famous plot point within the Ultimate Spider-Man series. So it was...
Well, now you got to see it.
Yeah, it was that.
It was like that meme of the person that was me right there, holding the eyes wide open.
I feel like off the bat, before we get into the meat of the episode, since we just opened with it, I mean, if anyone's concern was that this show was going to Disney-fy Daredevil on the violence front.
Yeah.
I mean, no. No.
Okay, no. Where do you want to start here? Welcome everyone joining us. I love it. Let's freaking go to this finale. We got what we asked for, which is the height of Fisk's powers.
Yeah.
Matt kind of at the most broken. Things are not in the right spot. It very much felt like Across the Spider-Verse, or what is it? Yeah, Across the Spider-Verse, where let's start a band. I'm getting literally words, I need to get a team together. I mean, that gave me chills. I'm freaking ready for this team. An army. What? I mean, so the army could be the Defenders. The army could be Spider-Man, could be She-Hulk. It could be a mix. Miss Marvel, maybe he goes and takes that dinner with Kamala. Like, I kind of love that idea. I don't know how that hit you, but like that, I don't know. This is how I wanted it to end.
No, I mean, it's a perfect setup for the Devil's Reign storyline that they've kind of been pointing towards this entire time. The reason why we keep bringing up the Chip Zdarsky run.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is sort of the show off between, or showdown between the like Fisk anti-vigilante task force, you know, within the comics, the Thunderbolts there and the heroes. Again, in Marvel Comics, you can be a lot more liberal in who you bring in. So in that comic, it's like the Fantastic Four. And
sure.
I don't think we're going to get in Daredevil Season 2, but
there's never right say stuff. Never.
I do wonder, like, do you think that we are actually going to get like a full vigilante team up, or is he kind of pointing, you know, like when he comes out into Josie's, it's just like the kind of anti-Fisk contingent of the cops, it seems mm-hmm. like.
Which I was wondering if he was going to literally take off his mask there and be like, look, we need to rally against this. He doesn't, but he's still getting that kind of team. I think that was implied that he's putting that team together. But I feel like it's also implied, just given the ending of the show, that there's got to be a Frank, maybe Jack. I think he's going to be putting more of a team together than just Cherry and Kirsten and Josie. You know, there's going to be a few other people involved, I think, was the implication. Plus, there's all these rumors about the Defenders being back on set for Daredevil Season 2. I feel like some mix of that. But that's the thing that the MCU can do now that the shows couldn't do, is there going to be any reciprocation from the films or the film characters? Meaning Spider-Man. Could Spider-Man be involved in this eventually? Another question I have is, wow, it really sets up like the next movie in 2 weeks. In fact, the review embargo for Thunderbolts is in 1 week from right now.
Jeez. That's
New York City, right? So unless that's a different time, I mean, but I think it's getting to the point where you're starting to think, like, what is Spider-Man doing? You know, what is Doctor Strange doing? It's getting bad enough to me, right? And I would like one reciprocation from Thunderbolts, a passing line. I read a thing that Wilson Fisk is not allowed to be in the films because of rights stuff. It's just a TV thing right now. Uh-huh. But can you name drop it? Can you just say Mayor Fisk if you're the Thunderbolts? Something to say, like, if they're about to go through this and the Void in a matter of a couple
that
of weeks.
That makes sense. I was trying to think why that would be the case, but that's because Kingpin was introduced in Amazing Spider-Man.
So you think it's already covered, you mean?
Well, no. Sorry. The reason why he wouldn't be able to show up in a film that's straight up Marvel is because the way that the rights are split, Sony gets any character that is from the Spider-Man universe. And they normally define that as a character that shows up in the pages of Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh.
Whether or not the character becomes known within another context. I think that's I don't think that it's a hard and fast definition, but I think that that is normally like the delineation. And so that makes sense. I hadn't considered that. Like, why could Matt Murdock be in No Way Home? But although I guess Fisk could have been in No Way Home too, because that's like a Sony co-production. Anyway, this is the like IP lawyer in me that's getting interested.
A shout out, I think, would be nice with this kind of, like, they literally showed the city's power off. There's riots in the streets. It feels like something that the Thunderbolts would have to address.
I really hope that too. Like, it seems like an easy, it's not something that they would have to address.
Because, it's not a dangling thread in that way.
And, you know, I feel like they're going to keep things international in scope, even if the team is based in New York. But I'm with you. It just feels like a layup. Like, if you have them coming out in this close proximity, and Thunderbolts is, you know, the whole idea is the, you kind of have this shady someone in charge and a team of Avengers stand-ins that are like by design more morally gray and more willing to compromise. Like it feels like it would just be such an easy, like, times are changing. Look at what's happening in New York. And then you're, but I don't know.
No doubt.
All right, that would be fun though.
Where do you want to start with this thing? You lead me. What was your biggest takeaway from the episode?
I mean, so there were a lot of, yeah, there were a lot of, like, little moments that I want to talk about. I think for me, weirdly, it felt both like really heavy, but also like weirdly encouraging for me, almost like on a personal note.
You psychopath.
Well, just because it's
on a,
like,
personal note,
one, you know, I love Daredevil, and I love seeing Daredevil. Like, I love seeing a good Daredevil episode. Like, there's something in that I just is always going to get me fired up.
No doubt.
But also,
you just love all the killing too. So
that's the thing. Yeah, I love the killing. Yeah. No, I think that it's like, it's an important thing to build up a villain in this way.
Yep.
That feels it's so earned, like we talk about, like, which is really impressive because they've now done versions of kind of building Fisk up, and you would think that they had kind of played that already. Mm-hmm. Like, that there was no more work to be done there.
Mm-hmm.
But if anything, by the end of this, you feel like it. I think it's the most that I've ever hated Wilson Fisk.
Ooh.
Like, you know, because, like, a lot of the value of that character is there's a part of you that's always, like, not rooting for him, but kind of respecting what he's,
oh gosh,
what he's accomplished. And
all right, Heather.
You are supposed to, like, empathize with him at certain points. And they found a way to make him as like one of the least powerful, like, villains within the MCU physically, like, one of the most terrifying in just this season. And I think that is really, like, that to me is impressive. But the reason I say it's weirdly encouraging is, like, to build up a character like that and then to, like, end it with that moment of Daredevil, like we can kind of take it back, and just showing that, like, the real villainy there is not just in, like, a super powerful, like, alien, but it's in some, like, the like depravity of someone that's willing to crush everybody else under their feet to get whatever they want, that is willing to, like, label anyone that disagrees with them a criminal, that is willing to just, like, sick, like, lethal forces on anybody that they view as potentially even, like, leaning in the opposite direction of them on anything. Like, that to me is that's a terrifying person. And so there's something about seeing Daredevil stand up to that that is kind of, like, heartening to me, I guess.
Encouraging. encouraging for you personally.
Encouraging for me personally. You know, it's a weird time out there for the rule of law. So it's nice when you see your classic superhero lawyer.
I loved the subtle twist in Matt's character with what they did with the ending. That Karen, yeah, actually essentially talks him off a ledge from just bursting in and beating a bunch of people up and probably dying, which is kind of his MO at this point.
Yeah.
The fact that she talks him off that ledge and he decides, you're right, we can take this back. The reference about the thousand suns or whatever that he sees, I mm-hmm. really liked the ending of that. And then the other thing for me is it was just really good to see Frank again. I think that Frank brings out a really fun, in a weird way, side of Daredevil that you just really can't get. It's kind of like what we talk about with Foggy. It's a little bit of a different thing for Daredevil, where you just can't really get it unless he's around. And so their dynamic of, are you going to take a bullet for him? Well, what about this guy? Boom, just shoots this other guy instead. Yeah. And then he's like, you are awful. But then they still joke. Like, that's again where I like the Disney Plus side of it. Like Matt making the joke of calling Shotgun, for example. So I thought that. Well, it works with Frank whenever he's on camera, and I want to get to Karen in a second because I thought that entrance was spectacular.
Yeah, and I totally agree. That's one of the things that I was going to talk about, kind of on the nitty gritty. Like I loved everything about Matt and Frank's chemistry in this episode. Like I appreciate Frank that they Karen's. Are, but I like that they are kind of they're building on the history of the prior seasons. And I think, you know, building on things that we haven't seen that we don't really have to see, like assuming that there's been some ongoing contact with Frank and Matt. But I think what the Netflix show would do in that apartment scene, Matt would make such a big deal about how Frank is killing people. And it would be such like a moral crisis debate moment. And we want that for Matt. Like that's a lot of what makes Matt an interesting character in juxtaposition to Frank. But there's also a point where it's like belabored.
Careful. Neil's sitting right here. Careful.
And you want to let it be like let the scene breathe and let there be some movement. And I think that like I respect the fact that Daredevil is fighting and not just constantly trying to stop Frank from shooting people. Like he is getting mad at Frank for shooting people, but there's almost this level of like understanding, like Daredevil's not going to kill anybody and he's not going to like intentionally allow Frank to kill somebody, but he's also not going to play like the like choir boy role forever.
Right. And it's just straight up fun to have them kind of working together as friends and not arguing about that a little bit. Which I also thought was kind of interesting that they ended the show on that Karen and Matt dialogue where she kind of talks about that a little bit. Like Matt says, like, the thing is I've had this darkness, I've let it creep in. Did you interpret that any other way, by the way, other than I didn't know if that was a little bit of symbolic of what you're just talking about, which is that he's a little bit, not okay with killing people, but it was a slight change of character, I thought, in that. Do you know what I'm talking about? When they were talking at the very end, and he says, the thing is, I tried to keep the darkness out, but I actually let it creep in. Was he then, like, repenting from that? Or was he saying, like, I'm going to be different now? Like, now I can be Daredevil. I need to watch it again.
No, I think I know the scene you're talking about. I think I'm thinking about, again, the Zdarsky run and how there are a couple of key moments where he kind of, you know, again, it's this question of like, is Matt, and Karen gets into this, like, is he Matt Murdock wearing the Daredevil mask or is he Daredevil wearing a Matt Murdock mask? And if he is Daredevil at his core, what does that mean? Like, is he like God's righteous warrior or is he actually just like a depraved, like violent devil?
But I thought that was a little bit symbolic of him embracing that he is Daredevil at his core, not Matt.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're right.
Hence, opening the door and just showing himself as Daredevil.
Yeah, which is maybe not necessarily like where he's going to land ultimately, but I feel like it's the natural next step. And you know, I love it because that's what we've been asking for the whole time. Will we just get Matt being Daredevil? And I think that the moment I'm talking about in the Zdarsky run is kind of halfway through where he basically just abandons the Matt Murdock identity entirely. Like he basically like everyone believes that Matt is dead and he just lets people continue to believe that and then continues on as Daredevil. And then you sort of see the slow descent into like he just becomes 100% focused on like the war, and you kind of see
kind of what they were doing here. I guess nobody saw Matt alive except for Frank.
Which is the other thing that I like. I appreciated on like the comics adaptation front. One of the famous moments in Born Again, one of the famous moments in Daredevil comics, is whenever Kingpin like blows up his apartment, his townhome, and that's, you know, like they're a little, they did so much of Born Again in season three, but I appreciate that there are these little moments where they just try to, it's like a nod where they don't try to replicate the beats of that exactly, but it's clearly sort of a shout out. I didn't think about that though. I mean, maybe between him getting shot and his apartment getting blown up, is he, do people think that he's dead?
Well, you know, Buck went to actually kill him. So maybe there's some way that they spin it when he doesn't show up that, you know, he just didn't make it. And that becomes a running storyline. Obviously, like Heather, Kirsten, and then his whole crew, like Cherry and all those people would know different. But to the public, maybe they could run with that. I thought that Karen showing up, spectacular entrance. When Frank talked about the phone call that he had gotten that changed his mind, right away my mind went to Karen's got to come back here. Side note, we'll table this. Foggy did not come back here or any real hint that he's alive. Technically at this point, it'd be pretty pulling the rug out from underneath us if next season he showed up, I think, because I feel like Vanessa had a chance to talk about that many times with Fisk or whatever. Anyways, Karen showing up, we'll come back to that one second. Karen showing up, so freaking good. Funny, I thought also, just like throwing the door open, being like, get in the car. And it's both of those guys there. I'm going to lay all my cards on the table here. This is not coming from a comics background, and this is not really coming from the Netflix series. This is just me emotionally. I love Karen, not as the love interest of Matt. So I am still Team Heather, even though I'm mad at her. She's doing a bunch of...
Oh, man. She's doing Heather.
She's doing a bunch of junk, but I'm way Team Heather. And I knew there'd be a bunch of people that are like, yeah, Karen's back. I don't like when they are romantically involved. I think that's some of the weakest stuff of the Netflix series. But I love when they're like coworkers, friends, like she's helping them. I love that. But I would much rather her end up with Frank and like they go on a date or like Frank finds some redemption via Karen would be awesome storyline. They reference that with her heart fluttering and his heart.
You're going to have to watch the Punisher series now. Look at you.
I know, and his heart fluttering. But I'm mad at Heather for what she's doing, but I liked their relationship. And I know that I'm going to be one of a few people on an island because she's kind of aligning herself with Fisk, which is obviously the worst thing ever. But
I'm just,
oh boy.
I was more sympathetic to Heather last episode.
For sure.
This episode.
For sure. I just don't want Matt with Karen.
Yeah, but is that, you haven't seen Matt with Karen in a different context. You've only seen it in the Netflix context.
Matt
you
and
also
Heather,
didn't like Matt
Karen
with Foggy
and Frank.
In the Netflix context.
Karen and Frank, Matt and Heather.
No, not, okay. Here's the other thing. If it's not
Karen
with Matt, that's fine. He can just be with Elektra. You love Matt and Elektra.
Oh gosh. Oh gosh. Way worse.
The Heather, like her being duped into like supporting Fisk earlier on, I was okay with. But at this point, I'm like, what on earth does an assassination attempt have to do with the power grid? Like, how does anybody believe, like anyone that is thinking in the way that Heather should be thinking after what Matt's told her, like how does she legitimately think that Fisk is just like an innocent victim in all this it's not at all suspicious that the city goes dark and then it comes back on and all of his enemies are gone?
I at the very, very end, Greg says Matt and Jen.
That's
fair,
a good call.
Fair point.
That's a good
fair
call.
Point. They had good chemistry too. At the very, very end, I don't know if that's how I was supposed to take that last handshake or if Fisk had finally gotten to her. By the time she was there shaking his hand, are we sure that now she hasn't been leveraged in the same way that, you know, all these other characters have been? That was a little bit more my interpretation of the very last handshake. Now, I'm mad at her for the way she handles Matt in the hospital when he's like, listen, I'm telling you the truth. even if it doesn't make sense. And then she says, I think I'll come back. That's like, okay, come on.
See, and that's funny because I'm not as mad at her for that, because I'm more mad at Matt for not, like, he doesn't have to say I'm Daredevil, so I know. He can say, hey, in my time practicing law, I have come up against Fisk, and these are the tactics that I know he uses, and lay those out. And I think she would be like at least aware and on the lookout. Like, it's not just like rumors and hearsay. But so him not volunteering anything and just being like, I'm sorry you don't believe me, but Fisk is the worst. And then her being like, well, I guess I'll come back later. Like, that to me is justifiable. And to your point, if the handshake at the end is actually Heather,
he's already gotten to her.
Or if she's like a step ahead and she's trying to stay close to, like, because she knows what Matt's told her, and she's trying to be not necessarily like team Matt, but she's, you know, kind of got one foot on both sides of the line. Like, that I would appreciate a lot more.
Okay. So it's still redeemable for you.
It's redeemable, but I don't know if like her and at this point, it would be like, we've only seen her and Matt together in like a peacetime. We're in wartime now, you know? I don't know if that relationship can make the transition.
You just hate it. Well, agree to disagree.
Can we talk about one more thing?
Frank and Karen would be really fun. Go ahead.
With the, Why not?
From the Netflix show, she was defending him from the get-go, immediate chemistry there. What's your problem with all these relationships? Jeez.
I'm not opposed to Frank and Karen.
Okay. All right. That's all I want.
I'm not oriented towards it yet, but I'm not oriented away. I did want to talk one more time about the break-in scene.
Please.
Because the two things.
Frank shooting that first guy in the face with a shotgun. The first shot.
All the Frank stuff was so good in a way that I felt weird. Like, I felt weird being into, but also like they made this kill squad of guys like so villainous that
for sure they like just kill those dudes.
It feels like the end of the Batman.
You kind
of
want
where you're just like,
you kind of want Powell to get it, right? Yeah, just to get it.
Oh, yeah. Man.
At least felt good when Frank stood up to him, by the way. Sorry.
No, so that's what I was going to say. Like, early on in the season, we were talking about how, you know, it was going to be interesting to see how they handled the Punisher character, because it's become so like politically complicated, because you have like actual cop cars that like sticker the Punisher logo on them. And I thought it was a super bold move for them, like as part of the story, to have Frank as the Punisher take on a bunch of cops, like crooked cops with like the Punisher logo on their vests.
Yeah.
And I thought it was like it was a cool move. And then I think it was like doubled down in the scene you're talking about, like Frank standing up to Powell and those guys just such a dismissive way.
Right. And the fact that Powell, after all of the people that Frank just murdered, would still have him theoretically doing this mission. I don't think, per our chat here, I don't think Cole North is dead. I think that was the intentional. That was the point of, first of all, leaving him alive for a second, I think, because all the other guys were just no-named cops.
Right.
But the whole point was Matt smacks him in the head. He still hears his breathing. Frank's going to shoot him. He steps in front of that bullet, and I think they leave. The only question then is, did the grenade get him? Did he throw the grenade, by the way? And did he have any time to get out of there?
So I don't think he threw the grenade. My initial read was that someone else threw the grenade.
I guess he wouldn't have had enough time, right? He probably.
I think he's alive. And I just wonder if it's something where he realizes that like he was awake enough to hear Matt keep Frank from killing him. And like, that would be like, I it would be crazy to me if they kill off Cole North, because like I said, the whole point of that character is the guy that is kind of super anti-vigilante that then turns. So it would be such a weird call to introduce him, kind of give him a little backstory and this much screen time, and then just have him be done. But I was really shocked, and I don't know if this is 100% true, because I don't think that they confirmed that it was actually him. But if he did kill White Tiger, that's a crazy move for me for that character, because that's like he's already in much further into like villain territory than Cole North in the comics ever gets.
Which, by the way, I found that really moving. The flashback of Matt debating and then showing Hector crying, getting released from court, really got me. And so I felt Matt's anger there of like, maybe I should just murder this dude. But that's a good point. If it actually was him that shot him, you're no longer kind of just gray area. Like, you didn't do a lot wrong. You just kind of were a hard worker. Now it's like, well, you murdered some people straight up, even if he felt like he was doing it from an order from Mayor Fisk. However, still redeemable.
That was also pre-task force, right?
Yep. Although there was obviously some stuff going on before the official announcement of the task force. Hey, let's quick take a second to tell people about one of our new sponsors, Omaj. Ooh. And this is actually super exciting. So here's the thing. I was going to wear my stuff today too, but I got the wrong size. So I'm still going to show you. Omaj makes incredible merch. And when I say incredible, I'm talking like, Rob, how good is that print job? Like, check this out.
So I told you.
Look at this Spider-Man shirt. I mean, how sick is that?
When it first came in, I was like, that's the first thing that popped out when I opened the package. Like, it's because you start to pay attention to these things as we make our own merch and we work with different folks. And this is far and away the best printing other than the Friends from Work merch, obviously. But setting that aside, and props to Greg also for finding Omaj originally and he's the one, at least for me, he's the one that introduced me to that company back when they were doing some Deadpool and Wolverine stuff.
And here's what's extra cool to me. A couple things. One, they have actual licenses. So the merch you're getting is things like you're wearing a comic cover or just the legit Spider-Man logo. Like, they don't have to beat around the bush with it. So they're licensed providers. But here's their thing. I actually have friends that use Omaj for sports.
Yeah.
So I got a throwback Mariners shirt here, which is incredible. So I didn't know, like, when we found them, I have non-MCU fans who buy all their sports gear from Omaj because you can get, like, throwback NFL jerseys and baseball stuff, and they got a lot of cool stuff. So I really think you should check it out. If you're going to check it out, please, please use the link in the show notes because it benefits us and it benefits you. Use the link in the show notes. I don't know if we have a promo code live yet, so TBD on that, but the link in the show notes will let them know that we sent you omaj.com, and it's they got a lot. It, by the way, also for my sports nerds out there, throwback starter jackets. Do you remember the 90s starter jackets, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Just the best things ever. So check out omaj.com.
I didn't even see those.
Link in the show notes. We'll be right back after a quick word from these sponsors.
Okay, girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings. They're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Clubs and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself. Because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
All right, so during the break, I was reading our YouTube chat, and Danny says this. I'm going to read it. Let's take a real step back and consider this. Fisk winning and being anti-vigilante is huge, but none of the heroes outside of the street level would even care. The Avengers are legally backed. That's a fascinating discussion, because at what point does Kingpin's influence rise to a, quote, Avengers-level threat? And at what point does, like, the government start putting together smaller teams to take care of smaller issues? You know, like, does Matt have to put together his own team outside of government rule, aka vigilante, just to make this happen? But like in Into the Spider-Verse, for example, Kingpin is doing something so threatening that Spider-Man right. has to get involved. In the Spider-Man video game, he has to get involved. I think there's like a fine line there, where if this went too much further, you would think that that next level of hero would have to do something about it, right?
Yeah. I disagree with Danny for two reasons, I think. I think that the heroes outside of Newark would care. Like, Steve Rogers definitely would have cared, and Sam Wilson would care even more so, I think. I mean, I think he is someone that is, like we've talked about, primarily empathetic and kind of politically sensitive. And I think he would be bothered by what's happening. And whether or not he would now mount some kind of attack on the mayor of New York is a different question. I feel like that's what makes this complicated. But I do feel like people like Sam would care. I think like someone like Kate Bishop, and then maybe by proxy Clint, would care. But the other part of that I think is interesting at this point is, like, are the Avengers legally backed? Because like
Thunderbolt
Ross,
is gonna
President
deal with
Ross,
that a ton more, I think.
Yeah No, I think you're right. I mean, like, President Ross, he proposes making the Avengers a thing again, but I don't think that ever gets formalized, right?
Well, Sam Wilson says he wants to get the band back together, but yeah, not legally, right? In fact, his case of bringing the Avengers back probably took a huge hit when he read Hulks, right? That probably erases right. any of the goodwill he had done towards that. So yeah.
So I feel like this would be, like, to me, and maybe you're right, like, maybe the Thunderbolts movie does a lot more in this direction, but I feel like it could be like a compound, like building this kind of like the bad guys are in charge general vibe that eventually, I mean, maybe would set up like the really, because I saw someone else asked about Brand New Day, like maybe that would set up a really interesting situation within the Brand New Day context.
Yeah. And Danny, by the way, I agree with what you're saying now in the new comment, which is I don't think it's gotten there yet. Like, to the Avengers, they wouldn't know. They just know New York lost power and he was there was an assassination attempt.
They failed to make the attempt.
And they failed to make the attempt on the assassination attempt. But could it get there is my point. Could it get there? Could Kingpin ever do something that starts meddling with something larger? Maybe. I have a bunch
curfew
of
is pretty crazy.
8 p.m. is pretty early. That was my first thought too. I thought that's pretty early. It just makes me think about so many things. It makes me think so much about the first Spider-Man video game. That's not Kingpin putting on a curfew, but the last time we saw a curfew, the martial lawness of it. My mind was racing as I was watching a lot of those things. Can I go back real fast?
Yeah, I do want to, just before we forget, because I saw Danny ask about this also. I think the Sokovia Accords have been repealed, right?
Oh, didn't gosh, we, here we go. MCU trivia.
I think we found that out in one of the projects of phase four. I'm almost positive that they were repealed.
Someone in our chat can probably bring that up. You know, here's the other thing. But, you got to look at the actual release order. And like when you ask about Spider-Man Brand New Day, Spider-Man Brand New Day is apparently supposed to be kind of like happening at the same time as Doomsday. So I feel like that combined with some rumors of it being kind of multiversal feels like it's not going to be dealing with this. And I had to quit Google. That's what I did a second ago when the second season of Daredevil is coming out. Because that may, if Thunderbolts doesn't, that may be the next thing to follow up on this. Because Fantastic Four is not going to. And I don't think Doomsday is going to be concerned about who's mayor of New York, is my guess.
Right.
So if this comes out before that, it says online it's early to mid-2026. It'll be interesting to see if this happens before that movie in May. And the only other thing I'll add is, here's a little humble brag, but also it's a bad thing. But we were maybe going to have Benson and Moorhead on our show. And we finally got word that they can't do it because, and I'm going to read this to you, just because it was encouraging for the speed of the next season. And I can't find it now. Shoot. But they said they couldn't do it because they were already, here it is, here it is. They're already in the director's cut for season two.
Yeah.
So that's pretty far along, right?
Seems like it.
So maybe that will be the next thing to follow it up if Thunderbolts doesn't, you know.
I do wonder, as kind of a last larger MCU thought for the moment, and then we can go back to the rest of the meat of the episode. But as we get closer to the conclusion of the multiverse saga, it does. Like, I'm wondering where all of the non-multiversal threads are going. Like, many of them will be tied up and how many won't? Because it doesn't feel like, I don't know, like, there was a point towards the end of phase three. Like, yes, there were still a couple of dangling threads, but it felt like we were very clearly converging.
Yeah. These feel totally separate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's hard to rectify that a little bit. You know, we talked about Secret Wars, like by the end of Secret Wars, Marvel will want to choose what even exists, what needs to be rebooted, and what is a totally different universe where they can tell some of these stories again. Or does the whatever timeline we're in win out? And that becomes, like, we get rid of the multiversal stuff. Although even that, I'm not sure how they like claim that there aren't multiverses anymore. Maybe some event happens that they all go away, in which case it sucks for every other universe except for the one that exists. But I'm with you. I can't rectify how, like, Mayor of New York season two fits in. And it's not that I don't love both vibes. It's just I feel like, I don't know if you were saying this, but like 7 years ago, I felt like they could do both vibes, but we ultimately knew they were kind of converging. You could still do Ant-Man and the Wasp, and it was like a heist, small level, borderline comedy movie, but all you have to do is throw the post-credit scene in there to remind you of the effect of Infinity War, and then Ant-Man's ultimately going to be the one, because of the quantum realm, to go to the Avengers compound. So like it literally converged, even though that movie still totally worked where it released. This feels like if Secret Wars wipes out universes or timelines, it is weird. Like how do they keep this side of it going?
Yeah. I mean, you know what though, unless they are merging the original Secret Wars event and the 2015 Hickman Secret Wars event, in that, you know, I mean, it's called Secret Wars. If I haven't said this before, it's like a delightful fact, because they, like, Marvel and Hasbro, maybe whatever toy maker they were working with at the time.
I remember you said that.
they held a like a focus group of kids and gave them a bunch of like random words, and the two highest testing words with young like action figure using kids were Secret and Wars. So they just named it Secret Wars and then built a plot around that, which is like
unreal.
Art.
Yeah.
But I
art with the okay. That was good.
I do wonder, you know, part of that, like,
that's high level never, art. A lot of people just don't appreciate it. You know?
People don't. It's like on, it's too high of a level.
It's a level beyond most people's comprehension.
Yeah.
But we'll forgive you.
It's fine.
We get it. Sorry you don't, but we get it.
It's a secret, you know, like that is a secret. But also the war in the original, like in the original event was like no one else. My point is no one in the world knew that any of that had happened. So like Spider-Man, you know, like on this, like Spider-Man goes away and he comes back with the black suit and like people know that they were somewhere and they're kind of like bits of reports, but by and large, no one ever knows that there was a whole thing with the Beyonder and all the villains fought the heroes and Dr. Doom was there. So it actually is kind of a secret. And then in the Marvel Universe, like the 2015 version, I think ultimately everyone forgets that it happened, but it is like a cataclysmic, like the world ends and people are very aware of that. So maybe they're merging them in some way where there is, you know, an ability to go fight like a multiversal battle that doesn't impact people in the 616 in their day to day, which I would almost prefer because we're finally getting out of the post blip trauma where I'm like, I don't know if I want like the average New Yorker to now be confronted with like the annihilation of their entire universe and the existence of their multiversal self.
I think one of our Discord listeners has a running list and chat, help me out, has a running list of what people, an average citizen of New York would have gone through at this point. And it is, I mean, at this point, rent's got to be the cheapest thing ever to live in New York. Otherwise, you got to be moving. You got to go to Baltimore or Buffalo or something. Just get out of there. Get a little bit of space from D.C., New York, and stay away maybe from San Francisco and L.A., and you should be good. You know,
I thought you were saying
Chicago.
You
got
to be moving. Like, if you're going to live in New York, you have to stay physically moving.
Well, that too.
If you sit still, you might experience an alien invasion.
They're just getting through these riots, and now they're going to have the void just literally wiping out, canceling people instantly as they
were.
So it's just a tough existence there, man. Rent better be $800 a month for a nice place. Otherwise, okay, I got some really quick. Just these are so just spur of the moment, sporadic, no order thoughts here. And correct me if I'm wrong on any of this stuff. The very beginning of this episode opens with Poindexter is being drugged. He's already in like a prison, like mental clinic. Is that because of the end of season three? Is that the understanding of the end of season three is he's nearly paralyzed, but he's going to get arrested. He gets the back surgery, which somehow kind of revives him, but he was in jail or a mental health clinic for his schizophrenia or whatever it is. Excuse me for whatever the word is, I'm blanking right now, but he's in jail for that. And he's being drugged on that. Is that the understanding? That's why he's being drugged. That's why he can't get out of there, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay.
I mean, he also like clearly is, like he was in, you know, psychiatric counseling or treatment, depending on how you look at it, prior, and Fisk was able to kind of unravel him using that. So I think it makes sense that anyone that is able to like look at his past and his file and now kind of realize what he's been through would think that he belongs in an institution like that.
And now, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just saying I loved that scene for filling in those details and showing how Fisk got out of the end of season three, which was one of my big things coming into this season, and Hawkeye. Like, how is Fisk not in jail after what
Wait,
Daredevil.
I missed that. I must have been taking notes or something. What was the explanation?
Well, so there's the line when she's like, my husband was able to get out because of the like corruption within the FBI, like the stuff that, like, basically what Nadim was able to show was like, it revealed like my takeaway was that, like, it revealed a larger issue with the Bureau such that it invalidated like the entire process. It like a spoliation thing almost. So I think that because of that,
I missed like that. I don't know what I was doing.
I need to watch it again and make sure that my understanding was correct. But I do think, like, if Nadim, like, if that is true, like, if I heard it correctly, that makes Nadim's story like so much bleaker.
Yeah, because he died for that, literally.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he would have died anyway, I guess. But it was like, to me, I appreciated that they at least attempted to show, like, this is why Fisk is no longer in jail the next time you see him, or like isn't in jail the next time you see him. Just because, like, it felt like no one had addressed the fact that at the end of Daredevil season 3, it seemed like he had won over Fisk. And then we see Hawkeye, he's, you know, just back out in his Hawaiian shirt.
I'm laughing at Zeke's comment, by the way. Rent is cheap, but the insurance is through the roof. That's probably true at this point. Okay, but then there's one shot, and I have to rewatch it, of Poindexter at the very end. He's adjusting a frame on a wall, but he's in a room where there's broken glass. Is that a room we're supposed to recognize? Did he go back to a specific place? It has to be a spot.
I wondered that.
It has to be. There's no way you include that detail unless it's like, what am I missing?
I didn't.
But also, I thought you were going to say that you love that he's still at large. Like, remember when you asked, do you think they'll bring Bullseye back? I was like, no, they're not bringing Bullseye back. Not only did they bring him back, he's still back. He's probably going to be in season 2, and he's doing a great job, by the way. And
he's so good.
And it's kind of fun to have him on the table again. But I am interested, if our chat can help me out, what was the room he was hiding in, and was there any significance to that?
Like, I didn't know if I remember in his apartment meant a lot. Like, he you know, you saw like the kind of OCD stuff, which I relate to, within his apartment. But also, like, I can't imagine that would still be something that he can just walk into, and that, like, whatever scars from his last days, that, like, you know, because, like, Daredevil broke in or like in season 3, Daredevil breaks in and he finds out, and I feel like he like tears his apartment apart. So I thought at first maybe it was that. At one point I thought maybe it was Matt's apartment, that he was like going to Matt for help.
I don't think it was Matt's, and I don't think it was his season 3 apartment. It wasn't set up the same way. This is so dumb, but I distinctly remember, like, if you walk through the door, the kitchen was there, then his dining room table was to the left when Matt, like, goes through that. There wasn't a window kind of right behind it with a frame. So if they're trying to say it's the same, it doesn't feel like it is. Okay. Go ahead.
Maybe it's just like a random location, but it did see, like, I had the same thought, but then every time I have that thought, I'm like, is this me looking for the engineer in WandaVision?
Oh God. The aerospace engineer? This is a really quick side note. We haven't talked enough about how cool the Daredevil Born Again logo is, just for the record. Like, whenever the music stops and then the city at the bottom of Daredevil kind of like illuminated. Really cool. I kind of liked how Fisk handled Matt taking a bullet for him. You talked about how he's not going to like that. And he was totally right in that, optics-wise, if he had succumbed to his wounds, that's going to look a lot better. Like, this guy who's now anti-vigilante, he can paint him as a hero for saving the mayor. So I thought that was all perfectly written.
Isn't it like, I guess maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I don't know. I feel like the show is kind of inviting us to read into these things. Like, do you think that the average New Yorker is buying the message that, like, anybody that anyone that does anything bad is a quote unquote vigilante? Because it's like, Muse is not a vigilante. Like, Muse was a serial killer. And maybe you could argue that he was a vigilante, like, because they're equating that with like a masked person, and Muse wore a mask. But Bullseye isn't even that. I mean, he's not, everyone knows who he is, and he's just out there shooting people. Like, that's not a vigilante. That's just like a terrorist, like a lone gunman. So how is Fisk able to keep using these things to like build momentum towards his anti-vigilante thing? Like, it's not as though there's some moment where, like, again, here's the comics.
It doesn't matter. That's what's so frustrating about Fisk. It's like, it doesn't matter what the average New Yorker thinks anymore, because anytime someone has some kind of resistance, they disappear or whatever. So even the city council is now putting two and two together. Like, oh, we're screwed, because they're going to find some leverage. But I'm sure there are a lot of people that regret voting for him at this moment. But what are they going to do about it anymore? That's what makes it so oppressive.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. I think that is the, like, again, that's the encouraging thing at the end, is you realize like there is this resistance, and it sets Daredevil up as like a, like it, the line that actually like hit me, and I don't know if other people thought it was like too on the nose, but the city without fear line, I thought was so perfect.
You loved it? Okay. Good.
I loved it. Good. I loved it. Like,
I didn't know if you were going to call that out for being a little on the nose, but I love that.
I could see people thinking it's like a cheesy line. But to me, because of like what this, like the season earned it, and Daredevil, like as the, like the across, you know, four seasons, I think has kind of earned it, because the whole thing has been this battle between like, is it Matt's city or is it Fisk city, because they both say that it's their city and they both get very protective of it. And like at the moment that Fisk is asserting control in the most aggressive, like obscene way, I love this idea that Matt is, he's not saying, oh, this is, no, it's my city, I'm taking it back. He's saying like, no, this is a city without fear. And I think it's this, like, again, it's like an empowering, like, this is what Daredevil is. Like, Daredevil is it's the conversation with Karen. Like, you don't, like, in some ways you don't have to be afraid of the dark, and you can embrace the dark. But at the same time, like, that means it's like staring the monster down. And I think that it was like, I'm sure that it, I don't know, maybe it's cheesy. It worked for me though.
I'm so happy for you. It worked for me too. Chad is talking about Sheila, which, if the understanding was that Sheila actually recorded Gallo, was that your understanding? And she turned it in, and she's outside the office crying, not because she's afraid for her life anymore, but because of what she did to Gallo. Tragic story, but also a little bit of a twist, because I thought she was a goner. And now she's kind of all in. It very much is a shout out to our chat again. It's very much like the FBI agent lady that I'm blanking on in season 3.
Oh yeah.
Because her kids are held hostage or whatever, forced to do these things. It feels like now same situation. She doesn't love that she's doing it, but she is outnumbered and she is toast if she doesn't do it.
But also she's going to carry that one. Especially when she finds out that that his head got smashed.
When she watches episode 9, she's going to wear that one, you know? when the documentary comes out and she sees how it went down.
When she watches the assembled episode.
and they show the special effects that was used. that's such a dumb dad joke right there. I'm curious, did you feel like the action sequences slapped, or were you still unsettled? Because for a while you were a little bit unsettled about some of the merriment and choreography and merriment in the show. And yeah. I thought like the Matt apartment fight was awesome. And then them jumping out of the window and using the grapple hook was awesome. And then the explosion was awesome. Did you feel that, or were you still uneasy with it?
No, I'm totally with you. I still think that one, I said this before, the season one stuff that I pointed or episode one stuff that I highlighted originally actually was way better for me on my second watch. And I think that the directing in these last two episodes has been like, I think Neil actually pointed out that some of my concerns in episode seven maybe were more directing than choreography. And when I went back and looked at it, I think that that's right.
Yeah.
And I have not felt that at all in the Benson Moorhead episodes. And this was like the best action. Like, this is some of my favorite Daredevil action, period. Recognizing that, like, it's a little bit more my scene than like the Daredevil season one hallway fights, which I'm not taking away. I'm not saying these are better than the hallway fights, but there's something about it stylistically that is a little bit more like the classic Marvel fan in me. So I was like, I thought it was perfect. The him and Frank stuff was like some of my favorite, like Marvel fight stuff that we've gotten in a long time.
One of my notes, when Frank kills people, I mean, he really goes for it. That was one of my notes. Like, he just, like, that one random copy stabs in the throat and takes it. I'm like, okay, he's just, woo, he's out there killing people, my friends. Like, this is, he's not joking around with his murder.
I also love, I mean, Bernthal's so good. And I love that there's this kind of like this, I mean, we've gotten some of this from Fisk and Matt in the season two, but it's like every time Frank takes someone down, there's this like guttural, like moaning scream, like he's just furious.
Yep.
It's like, it feels, it's so over the top, but Bernthal plays it with such nuance that it works. Like, it's one of those things where I think if somebody else was given a certain this same direction that wasn't as nimble of a performer as he is, it could be like ridiculous and over the top. But something about the way he does it, it's like the way he's always played the Punisher that makes it work so well is he does this kind of big, like bear, like roaring thing. But then every now and then he has this like really tender thing behind it where you feel the like ache. And that's the reason the character works so well in this context in a way that it hasn't in all the other like million adaptations of the Punisher that we've gotten before.
I smiled to myself. I didn't laugh because it wasn't funny, but I smiled when Frank says, you don't even know the pain I've been through. Do you know the loss I've felt? And I'm thinking, well, they're getting a little bit close because you just murdered like 100 of his friends. Like it's not there yet, but you know, he's getting a sense of it a little bit, you know, he got a taste.
Yeah. But they didn't have the penny and dime.
No doubt. No doubt.
You know,
no doubt.
But
just to be clear, to be fair here, that's objectively worse, no doubt, than corrupt cops. But I'm just, you know, you have killed a lot of people to where, you know, some people probably get a sense of it, a little bit of that.
I do. Yeah, it's interesting. Like I'm curious to see in season two, like what happens with like, do the cops like abandon the Frank Castle, like Punisher symbol entirely because he's clearly not on board? Or do they almost think that like, do they kind of cast him out from his own, like what they see as his movement? Cause they're setting up an interesting situation, I guess. Or like an interesting kind of philosophical conversation about like what the line is between criminal and vigilante. Cause you don't see, I mean, like Frank is disgusted that Matt thinks he would have killed Hector in that way. And that's telling. Like Frank would never view that as an appropriate thing to do, even though Frank is Frank's happy to kill like killers. And I'm just, I think it's an interesting look at like where you draw those lines. And I wonder if they're going to like continue pulling on that in season two, or if that's something that we see explored like at the core of this Punisher special.
Well, and the obvious moral dilemma here is that that makes Frank judge, jury, and executioner. Like, he's the only one deciding if they're evil. So, like,
yeah,
theoretically, right? Hypothetically,
yeah,
he could have decided that Hector was bad and then just killed him. And no one is there to say, hey, he's actually a good dude. Now, granted, he wouldn't have done that. But you know what I mean? Like, every time he kills those random cops, he's doing it out of self-defense in that case. But in the Netflix stuff, like, he wasn't always doing it out of self-defense. Like, I remember the Irish mob that's having a meeting, and then he, like, just destroys them all. They weren't attacking Frank. You know, so that just makes Frank, it's all up to him whether he feels like they deserve life or not. And so, obviously, that could hit a weird hitch if you kill someone that didn't deserve it, or, you know, never got the trial. Hence the Matt, you know, bringing up that
which
point.
Does. Yeah. I mean, maybe it creates like, the way that I've seen Bernthal talk about this special so far, I think it'll be fascinating if he gets to dig into that question. Like, what does Frank being confronted with this task force do to like his view of himself? Like, if he sees, like, this is what I've inspired.
Well, and maybe the whole special is just him wiping all of them out, you know, that which anyone who wears like, the logo. I think that was a little bit of the post-grad sequence, you know? Because he kind of plays on the fact that that guy might talk to him because he's kind of a celebrity to those kinds of people.
Which he, again, does such a great job with. Like, you almost, you know what he's doing, but you buy it a little bit in the moment. I also thought, like, you know, I noticed that Jack is in one of those cells at the end. I don't know how many other people in those cells. I need to go back and look at it. I don't know who all would be like a vigilante versus just like dissenter. But I do wonder if that is part of like the seed for this, like, quote unquote army that Daredevil's trying to build. Like, if
for sure,
I mean, because we never saw any real follow through on the swordsman stuff,
right? I don't think you bring the swordsman into Daredevil Born Again as much as they have without that being a little bit of the intention,
yeah,
for him to be a part of this army or at least followed up on in the way that they followed up with Frank already getting out of there, assumingly so. Okay,
I'm gonna be so fascinated to see season two and then look back on season one for that reason, like to look at what all, like, what was an artifact of a prior version of the show and what was put in here to set up the version of the show that they knew they were heading towards.
Yeah,
and I feel like there's just no way to fully know that until we see how it all pans out. But
so I'm going to wrap up here, but thank you to everyone watching live. I also want to say really quickly, since our chat's talking about this, I agree that I think the BB reports were a net positive as far as just like setting the tone of what the New Yorker, like you were bringing up, is thinking about throughout this entire process. And I am kind of, I hope they don't drop that. I'm excited to see what she's doing and how she feels like she can be a part of this army and, you know, on a media front. And I do think it helps set up the riots and all that stuff. You know, they got to see that.
Do you think that BB, like, they made a point of showing Gallo tell her about these files that he has? Do you think that she's going to wind up getting access to those, or does it even matter at this point? Like, who is she going to take those to in the city? I mean, even if she publishes them, like, does it matter if Fisk controls?
Yeah, I don't know.
Everything anyway.
Maybe she can get it out of the city and make it a big deal elsewhere, or.
Yeah. I mean,
Or maybe like, yeah, just making some of those other level of heroes aware of this, you know, maybe.
Yeah. if the APM curfew isn't enough.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I thought the
Spider-Man's not going to abide by that.
Yeah, he does most of his work at night. I thought that it was a little bit interesting that Matt is narrating the final sequence and just what shot they chose to go with what person. Because he says, like, whether they're weak and they show somebody or strong and it shows Heather. And so I didn't know if that was a little bit, because the choices were intentional. I don't know if he's just saying like she's a strong character, or if it's implying more there. So that and the BB reports at the end were just kind of interesting to me. So it should be noted. Neil wants Claire back. I don't know if we need Claire back.
I'm down for Claire back.
I'm not anti Claire, no doubt. As I'm
would
rapping,
would you take Matt and Claire if it means no Matt and Karen?
Yeah.
Okay, fair.
It's not that I don't like Karen. I think their chemistry is better as like a dynamic duo working and friendship. Even the very beginning of this season when they're flirting, it's not poorly done. I just am not team. What would that be? Marin or Kat? I'm not team Kat. I just want this audience to know that, believe it or not, the review embargo for Thunderbolts already releases next week. So if you're listening to this, you have 1 week before you're going to start seeing some reaction to that. I will add that generally, we don't know this, tends to be a very positive sign. If they're going to put the review embargo that early, it's partially because they think the reviews are going to be so strong that it will help generate more ticket sales. A lot of times, the Madam Webs of the world, the review embargoes the day before because they're hoping people buy their tickets before they hear how this goes. Now, that's an overgeneralization, but I also say that to say we're going to be turning the page almost immediately. A reminder to Austin listeners that we're going to be doing some live event stuff around Thunderbolts in Austin, specifically at Austin Books and Comics on Saturday, May 3 in the morning. So we'll give you more information on that on all social media outlets and Discord and all that as soon as we get more details. But literally, once this episode is posted, Robbie and I are going to have a phone call to turn the page towards Thunderbolts. And that means Saga so far. That means is securing our screeners. That means what episodes are we going to record when I'm with you in Austin? Cause I'm going to be with you for like 4 or 5 days. Like how much good stuff can we get done? The live event, Austin Books and Comics, our friendly reminder on YouTube. Basically we'll have time, no doubt, to talk about Daredevil and rewatch it and reflect on it. But for the most part, for the next couple of weeks, we're turning the page really quickly to this massive movie that's coming out. Anything you want to add? Kathew is better than.
Oh, nice. That's better. Nice. I just, because we are about to turn the page.
Oh, yeah.
There are a ton of Thunderbolts thoughts that I could get into, but I'll save those. I just, now that we're done with this first season, I'm really happy with the way this played out. Like,
yes.
Even
I was going to say that.
All of the like, oh, you know, is it going to be two, whatever, they're making this left turn. Is it troubled? Like,
yep.
I feel like
I'm so glad you're saying this.
It's what I wanted it to be. And it makes me really excited for season two. I love the note that they ended on. Like it's like a really kind of epic, like we talked about this last week. We talked about how Disney Plus, or at least, you know, Marvel Disney Plus finales are often where these shows falter, and that part of what made the Loki season one finale so strong is that they had the luxury of not having to wrap everything and being able to build towards something else. And I think this is such an excellent example of exactly that.
Yeah. Totally agree. And that was my last note that I had forgotten. So going back to this, yes. And here's my thing. I think two things can be true. Benson and Moorhead did an amazing job, and I think that their episodes were slightly elevated over some of the other direction. But in hindsight, you know, the show finished with 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a very high score. And in hindsight, I don't think it felt nearly as disjointed as all the hype led us to believe, or like there was so much talk about it. And I really don't think it was a case of they tossed all this stuff out and thank God Benson and Mord came in and saved the whole thing. Otherwise it'd be unwatchable. Skip the middle episodes. It's like, in my opinion, totally not that. Like, there was still a lot of stuff that you needed to have happen. You needed to see Matt trying to fight off that desire to be Daredevil. You had to see Fisk fight off his desire to be Kingpin. Like, I don't think you'd be feeling the rise to power nearly. It would feel so rushed if we didn't have a lot of what they did in the middle sections. Obviously, Kirsten and Cherry getting more developed, and Sheila and Daniel getting more developed. You would have had to have had that time. Heather's story and how she's kind of leaving Matt and that's falling apart only works if you have the moments of them together. Like,
yeah,
it really didn't feel as disjointed as I thought it might have. The only episode that felt kind of like standalone was the bank robbery episode, but it was also so well done and fun and added to the idea that Matt is still out there helping New York. So it just really ended up being a really fun ride. We'll have to come back and rank it a different time, but I felt like for the most part, it was excellently done, and it probably only gets better once it's all Benson and Moorhead. But like, don't take that as a statement of this was a waste and they messed the whole thing up. If only we had them the whole time.
Yeah.
I think it still was really, 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 really good.
No, I mean, I think the framing that they did, you know, or reframing was important. Like, I think opening it how they did with Bullseye and rooting that in kind of a reveal here at the end. Like I said, I think that it's really clever what they did to still like use what was there and not feel like they had to like scrap all of it, but instead to just kind of reposition it.
Right.
Because I think it allows the good stuff that was already filmed, like the bank stuff, to shine, but in sort of a different light.
But remember we love the Hector stuff and the courtroom stuff.
Oh yeah, like, no, for sure.
Would have been a shame to not get that.
It was also just like I think it would have been a shame to again fall back into these rhythms of the Netflix show that I am not dogging because I liked that show. But again, we got three long seasons of it, and it is a slow burn of a like, let's watch like just things move towards a state of corruption. Like it's this kind of like ongoing entropy. And I think that if this show had just been that, like, okay, Fisk is elected mayor and now he slowly like moves the city into darkness and we're just watching with rising anxiety, like that is there. But I like that that's there. And we're also seeing Matt like engage in like on a daily basis, like go and meet like Miss Marvel's dad. Like that is that's something that that I'm sure some people dislike this show for doing, but I think is an important thing to keep it from just being like so much of a grind all the time.
A grind, like, it doesn't always totally need to be unconnected that. Grind, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I agree. This has been a really fun journey.
This is to me like, and I'm so excited for season two because I think it's going to be even stronger. And I think what they're looking to adapt is so exciting for me as a Daredevil fan. But this is what I would have hoped for. Like when we first found out that Disney, that Marvel Studios was going to be doing a Daredevil show. Like this is like all of the things we just said, like this is everything I would have asked for. So I'm
no doubt.
I'm ending this very happy and very excited to turn to Thunderbolts.
And it was legit like prestige-ish as far as I will tell my friends about this. I mean, if you liked the Penguin, I think you will like this show.
Yeah.
In closing, thank you for listening, Neil. I also love the shout out to Angela at the very end. I think that's important. That's like when Matt's narrating, it shows Heather,
for the amulet.
But it also shows Angela. So like, that's not the last we're going to see of that character too. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for supporting us. Be sure to check out Homage and order some stuff using our link in the show notes. We'll share that link on Discord. We'll share that link on social media. And it supports us. It supports them. Thank you for listening. We love you guys. We'll see you next time right back here on Friends from Work.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.